Welcome to Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. I'm your host, Dean Beaver, and I'm once again joined by my lovely wife, Meredith.
Hello.
We have a special guest in the studio with us today. He's a very good friend of mine for a very long time. Unimitatable. Wonderful. Yes. The unimitatable Justin Verstraete. Justin, thank you so much for joining us today.
I am so friggin' excited.
So all of our guests, we ask two questions, so we'll go ahead and jump in. One, give me your life story in the span of a tweet.
Okay. I wrote this down so I could hit the character mark, as you said earlier.
We demand perfection here.
Yes, exactly. So here we go. Big boy job. Let me start over.
Now you're already over the limit.
Okay.
We're stopping this recording.
All right, here we go.
Everybody go home.
We'll take it from three. I'm kidding. All right. Big boy job haver, live theater professional, podcast aficionado, movie goer extraordinaire, comedy connoisseur, and a devout pro wrestling fan.
Awesome. I love it. Meredith is getting choked up.
Sorry, I got a cracker stuck in my throat. It's sharp. I'm sorry. I didn't want to mess up Justin's tweet.
I was going to ask if you wanted to start over, but no, we're going to leave that in.
So sorry.
Okay, the next question. What is your personal history with video games?
Hey, how long do you want me to go? Or just like...
Well, I mean, it doesn't
all
have to be...
All night long. All night. Oh, sorry.
Well, it doesn't need to be a tweet, but like...
You can get extensive with it.
Let's not start another MCU.
Got it. So video games were actually a very big part of my childhood. Small town, Illinois, just north of where you grew up, Mr. Dean Beaver. But
way north of where I grew up.
Yes, way north of...
Everything is way north of where you grew up.
This is pretty much true, except for Mexico.
But yeah, video games were big. I remember being babysat, and then my cousin had a Super Nintendo, mm-hmm. and that being a very big deal. And especially when Duck Hunt came out and they had the gun that you could actually shoot at the screen.
Yeah.
But being babysat and there'd be video games there. And then for one of my birthdays, I want to say it was second grade, I got the Sega Genesis. And like, I could rattle off all the names of the games that I got for that. Like, that was my system. Until I remember PlayStation 2 coming out. And that was massive. Couldn't believe it. I remember on New Year's Eve 2001 or something like that. It was like Madden, one of the first Maddens came out, and we played it, and like I could not believe, like, it looked real. It looked absolutely real. And I got one for one of my, I think it was my eighth grade graduation. Ooh. And we played PlayStation, me and my neighbors, Andy and Travis, and we call Travis Sparky, so if you hear me say Sparky a lot, Andy and Sparky and I, we played PlayStation 2 a lot, and a ton of games. And then, as I got into college, I would play games with my roommate, Kevin, and we more so played, like, that was the era of when Rock Band came out, and mm-hmm. more so baseball games. But, yeah, like, because Kevin's a huge baseball guy. But yeah, that's kind of the quick overview. Never really been a first-person shooter type person, or
Dean.
Or yeah, or a big multi-world. You know, was a world MMO.
I would get into that, but like I just know enough about myself to be like.
You wouldn't have a life anymore?
Yeah, if I do that, I'm going into a basement, I'm gaining 200% body weight, and somebody's going to have to wash me with a rag on a stick.
And I don't want that lifestyle. No.
And yeah, so a lot of the games necessarily weren't like, they were more so sports-based, or like they had a conclusion by the time I finished.
Yeah.
So like there was either a game that I completed in an hour, there was, you know, very few like... where I spent, like, I know people spend hours and hours and hours trying to complete a full game, but I guess I don't want to just say, well, pro wrestling games, and then also like sports games, I guess you could say. But then there was other crazy ones like Crazy Taxi and all those bonkers ones. So, okay, I'll stop talking. But that's a brief history.
Okay. Since you're big into sports games, you may want to listen to our episode on the Madden Curse.
I saw that. Yeah, I'm going to download that.
Chris is on that one, right?
Yeah, my friend Chris Pennant.
Yeah. He's a good listen too, I bet.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We went through a lot of the cover athletes on the Madden games and what they did or didn't do in order to incur the wrath of the Madden curse.
Mm-hmm. There's something like that for the WWE games too, but it's not as bad.
Right at the end, there's an honorable mention about Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
They got announced, and like their next fight, they both got destroyed. So that was fun.
Mortal Kombat one with Charles is also good.
Oh yeah, definitely. I told this story, but Justin, just real quick. I don't know if you know, but Mortal Kombat was basically made in Chicago. The studio where they captured all of the motion capture footage, like that's in Chicago. Mortal Kombat 2's attract mode, as a matter of fact, lists an address where you can send an order form to get a copy of the soundtrack. And that processing plant or wherever that went, it's on like Irving Park Road.
What?
Yeah.
That's rad. That's so rad.
I know,
so
he was like reading these like addresses and stuff, and I was like, I know where that is.
Yeah.
We got a lot to get to through. Oh, no, we don't have a whole lot to get through today.
You're lying.
So let's go ahead and jump right in. Basic format, Justin, is I'm going to read this book report that I wrote. If you have a question at any point, please interrupt me. I know you're a Midwestern boy, and you hate interrupting people, and you're going to say sorry. I'm same way, but just overcome your fear.
I mean, Cloud interrupts you constantly, so.
Writer Peter Rader had a discussion with producer Brad Crevoy about creating a Mad Max ripoff movie.
Mm-hmm.
The initial script was written in 1986, but shelved for 3 years. After several rewrites, Kevin Costner and Kevin Reynolds joined the project in 1992.
That was Kevin Costner's like heyday.
This film would be the fourth collaboration between Costner and Reynolds after 1985's Fandango, 1991's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and 1994's Rapa Nui.
Morgan Freeman was also in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and he was great.
Yes, he was. Finally, Waterworld was released on July 28th, 1995. In the year 2500, the polar ice caps have melted and submerged all of the Earth's continents underwater. Human society clings to life aboard ramshackle colonies known as atolls. The film follows the mariner, Kevin Costner, a mutant with gills and webbed feet, as he defends a young girl named Enola, Tina Margarino.
I have a story about this movie.
And her guardian, Helen, played by Gene Triplehorn, against a leader of pirates known as the Smokers and their leader, the Deacon, Dennis Hopper. Enola's back is tattooed with a map to a mythical continent, Dryland, which which is the top which is the top of modern-day Mount Everest. It's rumored to contain large amounts of dirt, a rare traded commodity at the time.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
All right, Meredith, you have a story.
Oh, so when Waterworld came out, of course, everyone knows it was kind of slammed critically. And I think it wasn't a great movie, but it wasn't like as terrible as they like slammed it for.
That's great. That's the vibe. General consensus.
Yeah. So I think the reason was Kevin Costner had gotten so big that they just wanted to take him down a peg. And so they just like freaking slammed him for Waterworld. Anyway, my parents and I ended up watching it when I was dating. It was like probably my first serious boyfriend, like out of high school. We did the long distance thing, college and all that stuff. And we're sitting on the couch with my parents. And there's this scene where like Kevin Costner takes what's her name underwater to like hide her from the pirates. And he can breathe underwater because he's got the gills. And like, so he's breathing for both of them. So they're kind of like making out, surviving underwater with the kissing, breathing thing. And while we're watching this, you know how awkward it is to watch like any kind of like physical scene with your parents. And so, and I've also got my boyfriend with me, and we're at that age where we're like 18 and 19. So it's just like, just on the verge of like, we should be okay with this, but we're like, not. And like, no one could sit there silently and just like, let it happen and let the moment pass. Like, my parents had to make comments about it. And I just remember my dad saying, I don't want you guys trying that out in the bayou tonight.
Oh, geez.
And my mom goes, have you checked behind his ears to see if he has any gills, Meredith? And I just wanted to like melt into the floor and die. And that is my Waterworld story. I'm traumatized.
Can I share a Waterworld story real quick?
Of course.
No, we just had you on to listen.
Our good friend, our co-friend, our friend of many, and also past guest, I see, Joe Ramsky. I turned him on. He did not know I turned him on. But no, he did not know that I was not joking when I was talking about this subject. And that the Universal Studios in LA has the Waterworld, like,
oh yeah, like, they still have like
theme park,
the stunt show.
It's like the Indiana Jones stunt show at like Disney and stuff.
Which, by the way, Kevin Costner did all of his own stunts.
Oh, there you go. Either way, Joe thought I was joking the entire time I was explaining the Waterworld stunt show. I was like, and I was like, no, it's actually really rad. it's supposed to be better than the movie ever was. It's actually supposed to be super fun. And then at the tail end of the conversation when we were talking, he just went, wait, are you telling the truth? And I was like, yeah, dude, why do you think I've been talking about it for so long? Google that shit. and then the conversation lasted for a lot longer, him going, oh my god, it's real. That's my Waterworld story.
Awesome. I like it.
The production of the film was plagued with cost overruns and production setbacks. While initially given $100 million to produce the movie, that sum eventually ballooned to $175 million.
Jesus. You know, the accountants were back there going, oh my God.
Making it the most... Making it the most expensive film yet made.
At the time? Okay.
At that point, yeah.
Like, Titanic came out like the next year.
Oh, right. So, that was a lot of water, too.
Filmmaker Steven Spielberg warned Costner and Reynolds about filming on the open sea, recounting his own difficulties in filming 1975's Jaws. True to form, a multi-million dollar set was destroyed by a hurricane, which resulted in a slaver subplot being scrapped from the movie. Canceled screenwriter Joss Whedon was brought in to do last-minute rewrites for the script, which he later described as, quote, 7 weeks of hell, end quote, as it involved editing in Costner's ideas without alteration.
Oh, man.
Ooh.
Costner and Reynolds argued frequently during production, and Reynolds eventually left the project during post-production, leaving Costner in charge of most of the editing.
Hey.
Upon its release, Waterworld was fortunate enough to debut at number one in the box office. Unfortunately, that's about where the good news ends. Contemporary critics gave it mixed reviews, with Roger Ebert stating, the cost controversy aside, Waterworld is a decent futuristic action picture with some intriguing ideas and a few images that will stay with me. It could have been more. It could have been better. It could have made me care about the characters. It's one of those marginal pictures you're not unhappy you've seen but can't quite recommend. The film.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's solid. Yeah. For all the trash the movie gets, I was like, no, that's actually, I think that's solid. I think that's solid.
I don't always agree with Roger Ebert, but
no.
But from what I remember of the film, that tracks. The film grossed only $88 million domestically, while pulling in $76 million in the foreign box office.
Hey,
so it barely paid for itself.
Made money.
Only after factoring in home video sales and television rebroadcasts did Waterworld eventually become profitable.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, one thing that there was a few things that I remember when I was researching this. Meredith, the scene that you were talking about where they were like
underwater.
Yeah. The city that they go to, people have figured out that that's Denver, Colorado.
Oh.
So, and they eventually do make it to dry land at the end of the movie. So you can get kind of like an idea of how far they had to travel.
Oh, because like from Colorado to Everest? Yeah.
Oh.
But I guess it would be like flying really slow since you're moving on top of everything.
Yeah. Another thing is that one thing, I probably should have put it in here, but I was like, I don't want to talk about this too much.
But now you're going to talk about it.
Yeah. the 175 to make the movie, that didn't include anything for like marketing,
yeah.
Which is usually like another couple million.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, marketing. So being in the publishing industry now, I'm learning a lot more about how marketing drives pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. Like you want to just like write your book and like that be it, but no, like your whole schedule is determined on marketing. Like everything after the book is published is marketing. Everything before the book is published is marketing. And when the book is published, marketing.
As with many major motion pictures of the time, several video game adaptations were planned. Releases for the Super Nintendo, Game Boy, Virtual Boy, and PC did see the light of day.
Oh, along... Is this about a video game?
Yeah.
Along... Oh, by the way, Game Boy. Hell yeah. Yeah. My Game Boy. I actually, I had a case for my games, and then I got a new case for Christmas. And for I told my mom this... probably during the quarantine because, you know, sad things were happening. But I told her about the time that she told me to throw away the old Game Boy case. And when I did, I cried.
In the early thous, my like a guy that I was dating had like his Game Boy camera.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was like really confused about that for a while.
Quick fun fact about the Game Boy camera. When it came out, it had the world record for the smallest digital camera.
I mean, I did like the pictures that it took. They were kind of cool.
Releases for the Super Nintendo, Game Boy, Virtual Boy, and the PC did see the light of day, alongside a Sega Genesis port of the Super Nintendo game that was released exclusively on the Sega Channel. Long story short, the Sega Channel was kind of the precursor to like downloading video games. You could like plug in your Sega Genesis to like an internet modem and get games for
Never heard of that.
That's another, I too have never heard of this, but that is not surprising. That
I kind of want to do an episode on is like early internet. Releases for the Sega Saturn, Atari Jaguar, and the Panasonic 3DO, as well as a physical release of the Sega Genesis game, were ultimately canceled. No official reasons were given to these games' cancellation, but it can be reasonably assumed that the film's less than warm box office reception is at least partially to blame.
I mean, yeah. Like, let's be real. Like, that was totally why.
First, we're going to talk about the Super Nintendo game. The Waterworld game was released for the Super Nintendo in 1995, only in European territories, and developed, quite fittingly, by Ocean Software.
So wait, okay. So... So when they release things only in European places, mm-hmm. like do people in Europe just like all the games? Like, do they just not care? Or is it because they maybe didn't hear about how bad the reception was for the movie?
I don't know what all.
Or is it cheaper to go over there?
I don't know exactly why they decided not to bring it to America.
Good are you here?
Hey, I do know that the film did better in foreign box offices than domestic box offices.
Well, that makes a little sense. Okay.
Like I was saying earlier, if you have a movie that didn't do very well, its game is probably not going to do well either.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense because, yeah. And
generally, movie licensed games kind of have a reputation for not being that great. Mm-hmm. What's really weird is there's a video game adaptation of Platoon.
What?
Yeah. You know that one with like Willem Dafoe and he's like screaming in Vietnam?
No.
Yeah,
that has a game. There's also a Dirty Harry game that came out like 10 years after the movie. Anyway.
Well, Dirty Harry is kind of interesting though. Get out of here, you hammerheads. No, that's what, out of my way, hammerheads. That's what he says. It's my favorite line in the movie.
The game follows the Mariner in three types of levels. Diving to collect valuables from the deep sea, sailing on the trimaran and shooting down enemy smokers,
and combating smokers on board various atolls in side-scrolling platformer levels. In between levels, the mariner can sell his gains from diving to upgrade his weapons, as well as buying additional health and ammo power-ups. The game climaxes in a battle with the Deacon aboard an atoll. He dies in one hit and is...
What? Like, yeah. Isn't he supposed to be the big boss?
What? No, if you have a gun, you can shoot him once and he dies.
I mean, that's realistic, but kind of disappointing for games.
Yeah. Congrats.
Yeah, and like you shoot him and this like message pops up and is like, congratulations, you defeated the Deacon.
That's bullshit.
He dies in one hit and it is not consistent with the movie, where the Deacon perishes after the Mariner bungee jumps from a hot air balloon to pull Enola out of the path of the Deacon's jet ski. This causes the Deacon to hit several other smokers, causing all of their jet skis to explode.
Yeah, that's much more fun.
Yeah. Quick side story about Dennis Hopper.
I love Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper also played King Koopa in the Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah, he did.
And
oh, right. Wasn't that like a bad movie?
That's another wild story. Apparently that movie went through like four or five rewrites, like page one rewrites. And like all of the actors who signed up to do it, like they really liked the original script. And then five scripts later, they were like, why are we still here?
I remember I was sorry. I said sorry. Yep, that, Midwestern boy.
I called it.
I when I would get babysat by my grandparents, sometimes they would rent movies for me to watch. You know, mm-hmm. if like my parents were working late, and we rented Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers, the movie, because I was like, of course I want to watch this. And I remember my mom telling me later that she was like, was the movie okay? And I was like, yeah, it was fun. I liked it. And my grandpa just sat there watching it. He didn't care. Yeah, he didn't care. But apparently my grandmother thought that it was too scary for me. And she was very worried. And it's very different than the games.
Oh, yeah.
How old were you?
I don't know. Check. Like, I don't know what year it came
or
out.
94.
But I was fine. But she was very, very concerned.
My parents always thought things were going to be scarier to me. Like the things that my parents tried to protect me from versus the things that they actually let me see that traumatized me. Or like for instance, Little Shop of Horrors when I was 10, terrified.
Oh,
terrified.
Yeah.
Thought that plant was going to eat my legs under my desk. Was shaking. My dad came in to check on me after yelling at me for being scared of the movie. And like put his hand on my shoulder and he's like, are you cold? You're shaking. I was like, no, I'm scared that the plant's going to eat my legs.
My dad was the same way. Okay. So, you know, my dad and I differ a lot, but I feel like I got a lot of my comedy juices from him. Yeah. Like dad was so loved. That's why I said comedy connoisseur. I got all that from my dad. We watched all the comedies together. I shouldn't have been watching, you know, at 5-6 years old, every Eddie Murphy movie made. Also Eddie Murphy Raw, you know, his stand up and all that kind of stuff. So his hit ratio of like comedies was like none other. He would introduce me to all the comedies. But then he'd be like, hey, this is Predator. And I know this is a big thing for you, Diener. You love yourself some Predator. But at the time, you know, little Justin, the movie opens up with like bodies hanging from trees that are skinned.
Yeah.
And yeah. Justin goes running from the room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so it would just be like, yeah, come watch Coming to America. And I'd be like, oh, this is amazing. And then he'd be like, hey, let's do Saving Private Ryan. You know? Yes.
Yeah, I know. Like, I feel like they would be like, it's PG-13. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm 13. So that's okay.
Yeah.
But then like Little Shop of Horrors, they were like, it's musical. Like what is your problem? Yeah. And I'm like, he's eating people. I was also a little more sensitive as a child too.
Yeah, but Bill Murray's at the dentist.
That I still will not watch Little Shop of Horrors. Also, Saving Roger Rabbit. No, not Saving Roger Rabbit.
Who's Framing
Roger? I was mixing up Saving Private Ryan. Who's Framing Roger Rabbit? I had to like leave the theater.
Really?
Like when they dissolved the shoe at the very beginning, I went ape shit. Like I was sobbing, and my mom was like, "Go outside."
Yeah.
And so I like
I'm staying. I'm watching.
I had to. Well, my whole family was in there, so I had to go outside, take a breath. and like come back. And I was terrified that night. Like, so I always move around a lot in the covers. And that day, the next morning when I woke up, I was like stick straight, like covers not moved. And it was because I kept seeing that dude's red eyes coming through the hallway, like coming to get me.
Yep.
Oh, so scary. I still haven't watched that movie again either. Like, I enjoyed it. Like, there were parts of the movie that I really loved, but terrified.
Anyway. I had kind of a panic moment when I realized that was Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
I was like, what? That was Doc Brown?
No, not Doc Brown.
I never made that connection when I was young.
I was going to tell a story about Dennis Hopper.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Dennis Hopper.
Sorry, not sorry.
Dennis Hopper was the was King Koopa in the Super Mario Brothers movie. And that bombed.
Poor Dennis Hopper.
He was on like Saturday Night. No, he was on like Conan O'Brien like a few years after that. He was talking about when he was talking to his son about his movie career. And his son said, Dad, why did you play such a bad character in, he meant bad as like a not nice guy. Why did you play such a bad character in the Super Mario Brothers movie? And he goes, well, son, I did it so you could have shoes. And the son said, Dad, I don't need shoes that badly.
Ouch. Kids can be the harshest critics.
Indeed. So, going back to the game, while most of the game is largely forgettable, the shining gem of the game is the soundtrack composed by British composer and sound designer Dean Evans.
Ooh, shout out to the Brits and to the Deans.
Yeah. While Japanese soundtracks tend to hit the listener fast with highly intricate melodies, Evans slows it down, allowing the composition time to expand and inundate the listeners with smooth, sexy 80s synth.
Oh, goodness.
So let
are we
going
to hear some of this smooth, sexy 80s synth?
Yes. Yes, we are. So we're going to listen to a few songs, and I'm going to say this in full knowledge of what I'm going to say. This is the sexiest Super Nintendo soundtrack you will ever listen to.
I'm ready.
Can't guarantee what it's going to do to me.
Okay. These have very to-the-point names. This one is called Map.
Okay.
We're also going to listen to Diving and Mission Theme 2.
Wow. Okay. So we got some creative titles here.
Yeah. So the first one is Map.
The synth is real.
I feel like I slowly need to take my sock suspenders off.
Yeah. It's business. It's business time. Let's do a mashup.
I'm gonna breathe into your mouth.
Oh, God.
You can't breathe underwater like I can.
Dude, I want the saxophone to, like, come on in with some, like, smooth jazz.
And this is while we're figuring out where to go on the map.
Yeah.
That's how sexy this map is.
So you can take your time and look at the map. Feel the map.
Yeah.
To find the dry land, right? Is that what it's called?
I think so.
Nothing's
the titles
be dry when you put this on.
No.
The titles are not that original in any iteration of this thing, I think.
Topography.
Pretty literal here.
Yeah, topography of this map. I don't know if I can take it.
East, north, west.
So up next,
east,
we've got
east, 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 east. Just a little bit of west, a little bit of west, a little bit of west. East, 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 east.
North. Shout
map.
Out, friends.
Map.
Oh, that was awesome.
We're all adults with jobs. So if you thought that was sexy, get ready to strap into Diving.
Going down. This is a little more magical. Feeling the magic here?
Wait for the drop.
Uh-oh. Ooh.
So this was not the scoring behind the kissing slash breathing scene.
No.
This is just...
just the game. Yeah. Just diving.
We were talking earlier about... Wait for it.
Ooh.
Oh, there it is.
Getting down now.
We were talking earlier about how the Universal stage show is better than the movie. Like, this soundtrack is better.
Like, I know what we're playing on our next date night.
Hey, girl. Wanna go diving?
East, 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 east. Don't know what to do with this magic. Just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah. Oh shit.
All right, what's the next one?
No, keep playing it. This is the good part.
This is the good part. I'm a little concerned.
Next, we're gonna mission theme 2. Strap yourself in.
Uh-oh. This is the flirtation part of the evening. Dancing at the disco. These are questions I don't know the answer to.
This is an audio medium, so I forget that the listener can't see me driving over here.
Yeah, Dustin's got the white boy head bob going.
Oh yeah, and it's not like put on just because of this.
It's like great because you're in your business suit.
Yeah.
You've got your tie going.
Yeah.
Just take off.
Oh, he's going full on Saturday Night Live headlock.
You, me, you, me, no, you, me.
Oh, damn it. Oh, well.
That was, I don't know if I could handle anymore, to be honest.
Okay, so really, I just wrote this as an excuse to get Meredith to listen to the Waterworld soundtrack.
Well played, I guess.
All right.
She comes home from work and she just hears that playing and there's just some candles lit.
I want to point out to everyone that it is Saturday night and this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave a trail of rose petals and Kevin Costner films leading to the bedroom.
Yeah. Maybe a map.
map. East, east, west.
Okay, so Game Boy, a downgraded port of the Super Nintendo game, was released for the Game Boy in the same year. So it was basically the same game, just shittier.
Okay.
It did have the same soundtrack. I didn't get any of the Game Boy songs because I think Meredith would probably commit Harry Carey if I made her listen to that.
Oh, no, I'd kill you first.
Virtual Boy. We've talked a little bit about the Virtual Boy on the podcast.
We have. But I don't remember much about it.
It was this like little visor that stood on like really spindly chicken legs.
Right.
And like they thought it was going to be the next big thing. And it turned out to be the next big not thing.
So, I remember that part. I also just remember the ad with the boy wearing the thing.
The whole thing about it is the Game Boy was only in like basically green and black.
Yeah.
The Virtual Boy was red and black. When I think Waterworld,
really?
I think black and red. I'll show you a little bit of a clip after we're done recording. But
okay, yeah, because I never played the Virtual Boy. Never had the.
I mean, who did? From what I understand,
yeah, right.
I did. They had a boxing game that was actually pretty sweet.
I never had the pleasure.
Anyway, released for the Virtual Boy on December 21st, 1995. Waterworld.
Let's get these two failures together.
Waterworld was the only movie tie-in game to be released for the doomed console.
I mean,
the game focused
so apropos.
The game focuses on a more developed arcade version of the Trimaran shooting levels from the Super Nintendo game. The player controls the Mariner as he sails around the playing field, shooting down enemy smokers and rescuing atollers floating in the water. Multiplayer functionality was
like the opposite of Grand Theft Auto in every
way. It actually
way.
Sounds kind of fun, like riding a jet ski and like picking up people and also shooting bad guys.
I mean, it sounds better than Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah. Sounds better than Waterworld.
We all eBay this game after this recording is done.
Actually, like I think that game is like pretty valuable.
I'm sure it is.
Because usually when things fail, like there's not as many of them, and collectors like jump on that shit.
For instance, my dad got a Corvette recently that he was really excited about. It's like a split window 63 or something, which is apparently really valuable because they like did a panel down the back window, which made it like two windows.
Yeah.
And it made it really hard to see. So people would like cut the split out of it and just make it a big window, which means that the splits that, and of course they stopped making it, but the splits that are intact now are like super expensive and really valuable and hard to find. It's just kind of weird. Same thing with video games, I guess.
Yeah, maybe they sell the video game at the Waterworld Stunt Show merch stand. Maybe they've got some leftovers.
That would be cool.
I would love to know if you get anybody in the comments, saying they've been to the Stunt Show / I have the game.
Have you ever played the game, Dean?
No, I haven't played the game. Sorry, I was taking a picture of the cat.
I just want the listeners to know that Justin and I are like vamping because Dean's doing that circular like pointing motion, like keep going. So we think he's like prepping something or whatever. And he's taking a picture of the cat.
Well, let me. I wasn't taking a picture of the cat. I was taking a video of the cat like reaching underneath the door to our bedroom that Meredith is in. Anyway, I've seen video of this game, and it sounds a lot cooler than it is.
Uh-huh.
For one thing, like the entire ocean is black because the outline of the ocean is in red.
Oh, is this just the Virtual Boy one, or is this the whole?
Are we still on Virtual Boy?
Yeah, the Virtual Boy one.
Okay.
And you get a score multiplier for rescuing Enola, but like there's nothing to differentiate Enola from any other atoller that you have to rescue.
Enola and atollas.
Yeah.
Just wanted to point that out. That I just heard that.
I'm glad you did, because I kept confusing the two in my brain and I thought I was just like being a bad paying attention-er.
And like they didn't really do a whole lot with like the 3D functionality of the Virtual Boy, except for the fact where if you game over, a digitized like red Dennis Hopper face comes out out of nothingness and just like shakes his head at you.
That's cool.
just disapprove. Just like, look a disapproval.
Did he get resids off that?
I doubt it.
I mean, he had to.
I think he tried to distance himself as far away from that as
you still want those resids, man. Okay. I mean, as minuscule as they might be from the Virtual Boy.
Multiplayer functionality was planned for the game, but the console was discontinued before the multiplayer link cable was released. The game is shown entirely in red and black and features a downgraded version of Evan's Super Nintendo soundtrack.
Boo.
And lastly, PC. In 1997, Interplay Entertainment released Waterworld for MS-DOS and Windows computers. The player assumes the role of an atoll war chief who leads anywhere from 2 to 14 men on 25 missions to amass enough fresh water, food, weapons, and critical information to evade the smokers and revert the world to its former glory.
So no Kevin Costner character?
No.
We're just in the water world. We're not following
This that is like plot line. This is like a side story.
Are the smokers because they use like gasoline a lot?
I think so. Which, where the hell are you getting that?
Well, hey, oil rigs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess.
Oil, because they had all those, if I remember correctly, in the movies, they had all those like, not like, it's like station, I want to say like stations of like decks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
God, it's been so long since I've seen this movie.
So they could actually shoot something that wasn't, you know, on floating water.
Yeah. Wow.
Which I think they did most of their filming like off the coast of Hawaii.
Well, that sucks for everyone.
That's not a bad gig.
Also, probably jacked up the price quite a bit.
Right.
I was having a discussion with my coworkers yesterday about how Hawaii is really expensive. And apparently, like, spam is a delicacy over there.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Why?
Because it's a lot harder to ship other kinds of meat there.
Yeah, they had to create it. They created it there.
Oh.
My ex-girlfriend, we're more so friends than we were ever a couple. We dated for a cup of coffee in college. Dean, I don't even know if you ever met her. Alana, when she lived in Hawaii, and I said she got the islands and the divorce. when I went to actually go visit her, I never got to go visit her as a couple. I actually went and visited her as a friend. Like, yeah. 6 years later, which was actually really rad. We had a great time. But her lunch, when we went to just like the little stand off the North Shore, mm-hmm. her lunch was just a spam sandwich, two slices of spam with rice in between. That was her lunch for the day.
Ew. All
right. Yep.
Like, just eat vegetarian.
Outside of Hawaii, I guess. I think Minnesota is the second largest place for spam.
I can see that. All right. So that's basically all I have. So.
Well, that was was a treat.
That was a great walk down memory lane.
It really was. Like, I feel like I'm rolling through the 90s in my brain.
That's what I strive for. So yeah, that's about it. Justin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm so honored to have been on this.
it was great to catch up with you.
Oh my God.
Justin, do you have anything that you want to plug before we sail on out of here?
Yes, I see what you did there.
Well, I suppose you could just go to my website, which is JVRSTR8.
The number.
.com. Yeah, the number. J for straight, JVRSTR8.com. That's where you'll find all my artistics goings-ons and all that kind of stuff. Writing a play right now that I'm very excited about. You know, we're still living in some wild times, so I'm not necessarily getting out there to hunt down the next role or the next gig, because I kind of want to make sure that when we're all in our black boxes and theaters again, that we're all breathing some good air. So, but yeah, that's where I kind of, that's where I keep everything, and my ongoing blog about to negate the thing I just said about going into live theater venues. You can follow my ongoing blog about watching 52 movies at the theater in 52 weeks. And even this year, I am now at 49.
What?
Close.
Wow, good for you.
Accomplishing my goal. So,
what did you think about Jungle Cruise?
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I had a friend who did, was a tour guide on Jungle Cruise, like the actual Jungle Cruise in Disney World. And he came back with a complex because he was like a really funny guy. Like, he was just a really funny dude. And like on the Jungle Cruise, you know, they have those like built-in jokes that you have to say, and no one was laughing because you know, and he came back and was like spasmodically like cracking jokes every 5 seconds just to like see if people still laughed at him. That's my Jungle Cruise story.
No, I actually enjoyed the movie. It reminded me a lot of Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one.
I remember when I was young, when I was like 3 years old, my parents took me and my family to Disney World. We went on It's a Small World After All.
Oh, God, kill me. I got stuck on that ride once.
I did too.
Between two worlds. So they were singing It's a Small World desperately. It was like hell.
But yeah, we were stuck on it for like 45 minutes, and I always joke that like that.
I feel like that happens to everyone. Like, I feel like it's a trap. It's like Disney World purgatory. Go there and you don't know if you're going to make it out. You can check out anytime you want, but you can never leave.
Contact contact, if you're a theater, a lover of theater, contact Jillian Leth, playwright extraordinaire, and her friend Joe, who I am now blanking on the last name. They wrote a fantastic play about the workers at Disney getting stuck in the Small World ride during...
Oh my God, I have to read it.
It is amazing. It's amazing. It was produced by New Colony before the end times. So...
I feel like that speaks to my soul.
Yeah, it's so good. So contact Jillian Leff. And I don't know her website offhand, but Jillian Leff. It's just how it's spelled.
Send it to me. I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, great. Yeah. It's an amazing play. Oh, my God.
So, Meredith, do you have anything that you want to plug before we wrap up?
I am still blogging away at meredithraylions.com/faster. And I'm working on a book, but... It's ways away.
I would love to read anything that you would ever want to send me.
Oh, I will definitely send it to you. And I'm really loving writing this one. It's one of those rare ones where you just have a ball writing it.
Yeah.
And the characters like just write themselves. And I'm just loving writing again for the first time in like a couple years. So I feel like, oh yeah, I am a writer. You know, it's like, it's coming back. And I'm almost through the first draft, and then I got some big things to fix, and then I'm going to be sending it to some betas. I'll definitely send it over to you.
Yeah.
It's a paranormal.
I would love it.
So as far as getting a hold of us, there's a number of ways that you can do that. I don't think anybody ever has, but...
Hey, it's good to have the option out there.
We have an estimated audience of 13.
Hey, I love you, 13.
We have a Gmail address that I didn't write down for this script. I think it's openingstagevgh@gmail.com.
I think you're right.
You can get us at Twitter @stagevgh.com because opening stage was already taken. We used to have a Google voice thing where you could call us and leave messages, but nobody ever did that, so they shut it down. But yeah, that's about it. Once again, Justin, thank you so much for joining us.
Such a pleasure.
This is Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Bye. I just got a sex pill text message.
You get a lot of those?
I know. How?
It's really weird.
And it's always assuring me that I can... Never mind.
Like he tries to tell me about them, and I'm like, I don't need to know. Like, I don't care.
Like, 3 hours? Jesus. Some water bottles.
Yeah. Who wants to do it for 3 hours?
Get painful.
Anyway. All right. So let's get to it.